Hey everybody, welcome to Surface Level, creating a community where Black and queer folks are fearless in thought and curious at heart. I'm one of your hosts, Jordan, and today, Demond, Tony, and I are discussing non-sexual intimacy. Does homophobia limit Black men's ability to establish non-sexual intimate relationships? How does hypersexual stereotypes of the queer community impact our approach to intimacy? This is Bromance. All right, so today we're discussing a topic that keeps coming up, obviously. It comes up in our small talk conversations. It comes up in our comments. It comes up in our conversations. But it seems as though the community really wants to have a conversation around how to establish meaningful, intimate relationships without the sex. But before we dive into today's topic, Tony, we have a very special guest with us. So do you want to introduce him?
I will introduce him. And it just made me think for a second, like, do we have a bromance? Possibly, maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know. Based on your definition just now, we might have to look into that. We'll decide later. So today, everybody, we're really excited to chat with Teron Beal. And for those of you who aren't aware, he has an expansive career in the music industry. And as an artist and as a songwriter. And so he's worked with the likes of, and you probably know who these people are, Michael Jackson, Jennifer Lopez, Kelly Rowland, and Maya, amongst others. Teron was actually able to tap into other creative expressions and get behind the camera lens as a photographer, where he uses the art form as an exercise to explore the concept of non-sexual male intimacy. Again, non-sexual male intimacy through emotive portraiture. And so today, we're going to get into some things as we welcome Teron Beal to our Surface Level family.
Welcome.
Hey.
Hello.
What's up?
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
On
how
the
you
West
doing?
Coast. Yes, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, we out here. I'm so excited. I kind of wish I was in New York, though. I wish I was in the studio. So, but yeah, thanks for having me all the way out here in the West Coast.
Everyone in LA wishes they were in New York.
I know. This is a thing, right?
Demond, don't start. We've already had this. We've already had this argument. Don't start. All right. All right. We're trying to keep it cute and friendly.
Well, look, for the viewers, you can see the West Coast SoCal glow coming through on Teron's camera.
Yeah.
But before we get into the conversation, I want to play a game with the four of us. So there was this
when the girls laugh. So they thought some shit up.
Like, what are we about to get into?
No. So there was this viral TikTok trend that happened earlier this summer.
I'm not on TikTok.
And it was this game that was called He's a 10, But. And so I know we're going to spend this conversation talking about non-sexual intimacy, but I want to talk about dating for a second during this game. All right. And so the game is I'm going to give a rating of 1 to 10 for an imaginary man.
Okay.
And I'm going to also say a trait that goes along with this imaginary man. And then you give me the new rating based off of how you feel like that trait impacts the initial rating.
Okay.
It sounds very complicated, but go with me. Mm-hmm. Teron, I want you to answer first on all these questions.
Okay.
Do I got to? Because I don't think I know the rules yet. I'm like, you know, what I'm supposed to do? Say it again. What I'm supposed to do?
No, you're good. So I'm going to give a 1 to 10 rating on an imaginary man. So I'm going to say, this guy is a 9, but he does X, Y, and Z. What's your rating?
Okay.
What's your new rating?
Oh, so I can either add or do. Okay, got it. Love it.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. So first up.
And this ain't non-sexual. This is dating. So.
This is just dating. Okay. This is non-sexual.
Okay. This was not in my contract.
This is not non-sexual. This is non-sexual, but it's romance.
Oh, it is non-sexual. Okay, well,
you can date and be asexual. So
exactly.
Let's get into it.
Let us know, Demond. Let us know what the A means. All right. So the first one, he's a 10, but he's best friends with his ex-boyfriend. What's his new rating?
Don't think too hard on it now.
Probably 11.
Oh. Okay. So it went up. Tony, Demond.
Yeah.
This is really hard to answer without context, but I'm going to give him an 8.
Okay, it goes down.
Yeah. I'm going to give him an 8. He's best friends with his ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Possibly, maybe not. Maybe, yes. I don't know. Context matters, so we don't have it. So, Damon, you go.
I mean, I think he's still a 10.
Congrats.
Okay.
My fiance is...
Oh, you have a fiance.
My roommate.
Congratulations.
I wasn't ready for that announcement. I thought we was keeping it a secret.
Well, that's part of it, though. That's part of it. Like, I have a situation where, you know, I was in a relationship. The relationship was great. The relationship ended. And when the relationship ended, you're thinking, like, okay, that's it. It's a wrap. But actually, we became much better friends. And, it was just a wonderful progression of already a very authentic, wonderful connection. And so now I'm like, oh, if you can be big enough to kind of, I mean, now I'm saying like, I'm doing it in the best case scenario. If they're still ex friends with their ex and it looks crazy, then I'm taking the score back. But I'm saying like, I think that says something, because relationships don't have to be transactional. It doesn't mean like, okay, once this happens, then it's a wrap. Like if you can go back and find the connection and find what made you align to that person in the first place and extend that, I have to commend you and add a point.
Okay.
Hmm. I agree.
I would have gave a 7. But let's keep moving on.
I see.
all right. So Tehran, he's a 6. Uh-oh. He's a 6. But he cooks and cleans.
Ooh. 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 That's like an 8. That's like an 8 for me.
Okay.
It's a new 8 now.
Okay. Yeah. 2 points. Tony.
Yeah.
You know what? I agree. That I would probably go for an 8 as well, because that definitely like ups the ante.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, I'm gonna give you an 8 for that.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I'm a legendary.
That's some Tupperware.
I'm gonna give you an 8.
You did what had to be done.
You did what needed to be done.
You still a 6. I can cook my own meals. And if I really want somebody to clean my house, I can hire someone to do it.
That's why you my 6. Because I'm just like, you are still a 6. Yeah. Because I'm ordering out and I'm hiring a cleaner. So that we still got to deal with the 6.
It's a 6.
Cooking all right. is so intimate, though.
It really is.
Yeah, that's why I do it myself.
That's the meal. All right.
You're about to poison me.
Ciao.
Tehran. He's an 8. But he quotes City Girl lyrics as his Instagram captions.
Damn it. I don't like to judge, but if I'm being honest, that's going to make it like a 5. I don't like to judge, though. I don't like this kind of question, but that's just, for me, yeah, it's something I'm still dealing with. Pray for me. But yes, I'm
my favorite. Well, I mean, that's fine. Listen, we ain't going to pray for you. It's your truth. And I'm going to say, I don't like it either. I don't want you to be like, I'm going to give you a 6, child. What was it? Wait, it was a 6 already? Oh, you're going down to at least.
It was an 8.
Oh, so yeah.
It was an 8.
I'll give you a 6. Come back harder next time.
I want to do this too. I want to do that.
It's your.
That's what we're going to do now, just for all the games. All
is
around.
This? I want this.
No. Right. Wrong finger.
Sorry. Right, I was doing the wrong
finger. There you go.
Tony, put all them thumbs all down. Right.
I like it.
I was gonna pretend like I wasn't gonna be judgmental, but like it would stress me. It would tire me.
It would
make me exceptionally exhausted. They were an 8.
Yeah.
One.
Damon would be over it. You are out of here.
I would have been sick as well. So I'm just like, if I see Cash at me in the captions, it's just like, I actually can't, actually.
Yeah, all right. I can't. Yeah.
Go ahead. All right. So he's a 10, but he takes 12 hours to text back.
What is...
That was personal.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah, it is kind of personal. Yeah, I'm kind of feeling that. Again, I have to be in my truth. I don't like to say this, but you're probably still a 10, because it's like, I want you to be busy. I want you to be doing stuff. Yeah, you're probably still a 10. Like, if I understand it, if we talk about it, if I know where you're coming from, like, sometimes it can be the opposite reaction if you always, like, so on it. Like, ain't you busy? Ain't you got something to do?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So he was a 10. And so I'm a... no one's perfect. So I'm gonna give him a 9 because I can understand under certain pretenses, but if it's something crazy, then we might have to discuss it. But like, yeah, I'm gonna give you a 9. I'm busy too, and I'm not gonna respond immediately either. So therefore, on to the next. Damon.
I think 10. I think people have whole lives that they live, and I don't expect that you need to focus on me as a part of your life.
Jordan. All right now.
Nene.
5. You need to worry about
when,
me.
When I text, you respond.
I need to be a priority. 12 I hours mean, is crazy. all right. I'm going to do 2 more.
That doesn't mean you're not a priority.
All right. He's a 9, but he doesn't own any books.
Oh. Oh. Damn it. I don't like to be judgmental because it's like sometimes, well, I mean, sometimes you in there to kind of help you. You kind of in there to like, you know,
teach people to read,
to help each other develop.
not me.
Teach them. Oh my God. Let me see. Oh, I'm taking away like 4. Oh. Like I'm taking away like 4 points.
Okay. That's reasonable.
Yeah.
So they were a 9. Yeah. They were a 9.
You hear this? So it's a 5 for you, Teron.
Yeah.
yeah. If you don't have any, if you don't own any books, that's a big red flag. You know, I don't do a shit ton of reading, but I own some books. So it might be a 3 for me. Damon.
We have a library in my home. So like I just don't think there's alignment for us.
So, there's no future. There's a 0.
But whoever was using those city girl captions, they should hang out.
They should.
They actually be a match made in heaven, actually.
And then they can make TikToks together. Straight work and bag
me. They can make TikToks.
First of all, people who read are also on TikTok. It's not just people who are illiterate and listens to city girls.
I didn't think they were illiterate. They, you know, they like digestible content.
Yeah.
Yeah. They like comes in bite-sized videos with dances.
All right. Last one. He's a
digestible 9. Content.
Snackable content. All right. He's a 9, but he thinks Beyonce is overrated.
Child. And that's all the time we have this week.
Yeah. he's still a 9.
Oh.
Tony lost. Tony is not inside himself no more.
I'm not inside myself.
Oh, yeah,
I need
yeah.
to process that because if you're a 9 and you think Beyonce is overrated, you could still be a 9, but I mean, listen, I'm gonna be at the concert and you're gonna be home sad about it because you're not there. Yeah. I can't go to the concert with you. Absolutely not. Like,
yeah.
But we can still do everything else. Everything else might be really, you know, quite nice, and I'm okay with that. I don't need you to like everything I like. Damon.
I'm just gonna say like 7 or 8. Like take a little bit off because like I just feel like there are those people that like try to say stuff to just be controversial. Yeah. And like typically when people get into this conversation about Beyonce, it's just like I want to play devil's advocate. And I'm like, you're making me tired. Break my soul's fire. Good night. Have fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to drop it down to a 7.6. I think that if you think that Beyonce's overrated, I think that you're probably just an underachiever.
Ooh.
all right.
And that's that on that.
And so my last question is for you only, Teron. What are you curious about?
Wow. Authenticity. Like my journey toward authenticity, like I think that's my superpower. And that's, I'm really pushing that these days. I'm really like, standing on the premise that my intuition is unmatched, that if I feel something, I go directly into that, and I'm starting to shun like what I used to think. So that's what I'm curious, like, does it really work out if I really lean completely towards how I feel, not what I think, not what the trends are, not what my engagement is on social media? Like if I really lend myself towards how I authentically feel, will it work out? And I'm curious about that.
Love that.
Fantastic. Such a great thing to be curious about because we talk about that a lot on this show.
Yeah.
Authenticity, leaning into that. What does it mean? What happens when we all stop pretending? And so Very on brand. However, today we're going to get into some conversations, as Jordan mentioned earlier, about non-sexual intimacy. It's a topic that I think a lot of people would love to hear from us about. And as always, we like to bring in folks that will add value to the conversation. And so, Teron, we know this has been your thing recently. So let's start here. Society often labels Black male intimacy as inherently gay or non-heterosexual. How has that stigma impacted your ability to establish meaningful relationships with straight men? And I'm asking that to the group, not just to Ron, but I want us to have a dialogue about that. Who? Anyone want to go first? Anyone feel particularly moved to speak?
I can start. When you asked that question, I was thinking about like one particular experience that I had. So when I started at Howard University, freshman year, I had a predominantly straight friend group. Mm-hmm. And we were very close. We did everything together. We had lunch together, breakfast together. We had the same classes. We were all like in the School of Business. And it wasn't until maybe the end of freshman year that one of the closest people in that group came up to me and was just like, "Hey, are you gay?" Mm. Because people are saying that they think that you're gay, and they're saying that they think that I'm gay because I'm hanging out with you. And that kind of like shook me a little bit, because I would have never tried anything with them. Like, I wasn't out, but like I also just like really enjoyed the brotherhood that we all shared. And so I never was going to cross that line, but I also wasn't ready to come out. And it sucked, because I felt like, because the campus sort of established, and not the campus, beyond campus, society established this gay by proximity mm-hmm. construct.
Yep.
I felt like I was burdening my straight friends by being near them.
Oh my goodness.
And at that moment, I decided to pull back from that friendship and involve myself in other things on campus and involve myself around a different group of friends. And so when I think about this question about being able to have intimate relationships with other men that aren't sexual, yeah, like I felt like that really impacted that. And I felt like I couldn't just be the homie, because there was always this underlying thing. It's like, if the straight guy is the homie with the gay guy, then they must be doing something gay yeah. together. And so, yeah, I wasn't strong enough to push through that and talk through that at that time, being 18, 19. But that, I think that really impacted the way that like I sort of navigated my relationships with straight people.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me in terms of like, what do you do in that situation
when you're not ready to come out, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of like, am I coming out right now? Like, you just asked me this question. Like, I didn't prepare my like speech. Not that I had one, but I kind of did. But
it's just like, bitch, you had a speech,
right?
A little bit.
Anywho, Damon,
you know, I've talked a lot about my dad before he passed away, and he was, by the time I was an adult and came out to him, exceptionally supportive. But like, there was a journey to get there.
Yeah.
And I just remember, like, I've always been affectionate towards my mom, but I remember there was a point, I can't remember, like late in our time at Howard, right after we graduated, I can't remember, but I realized me and my dad, we didn't say I love you out loud.
Oh.
Mm. And not because I didn't know that he did love me, not because he didn't know that I loved him back,
yeah.
but just like the men in my family.
That was just the timeline. That's what it gave.
We didn't speak that way. We have five siblings. Four of us have, there are four brothers, mm-hmm. and like none of us said those things to each other.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I think now that I'm thinking, it had to be after we left Howard. I remember being around like my queer friends, and then like the girls just say, "I love you." like they're throwing out candy.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
And I remember I was like, why don't I communicate this to the other men in my life who I feel this way about? And I remember I started saying it's my dad, and then he started saying it back, and it just became
a thing,
like a part of how we would say goodbye, or how we would greet each other, or how we would end phone calls. And my brothers with this, the same thing. Like, I have three brothers. One is also queer. But like our dialogue became a bit different over that experience, and I think it's one of those things that, and like now that my father's not here anymore, it's one of those things that I wish I had said it earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I had been saying it for 32 years, but, or I couldn't talk when I was a child, but 30 years. And whereas like I got to say it for maybe 8.
Mm-hmm.
And just thinking, because like we were, I don't know how to phrase it, but like afraid to say it, or it just wasn't a part of how we spoke to one another.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that there's so much power in words and the words that you choose to communicate, how you choose to communicate with people. Yeah, and that was the thing that would just struck me as I was going through that question.
Yeah, it's so funny how we all have different experiences. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, like my dad was the parent who did show an outwardly display of love to me. He was the parent that was always like, my son, I love you, like, mm-hmm. and wasn't, it was unabashedly, mm-hmm. and which is not typical for a Black dad. I hear a lot of the same stories, mm-hmm. as you, Damond, where you don't really hear that. My mom was the one that never really said I love you, and I actually had a conversation with her years later. I was like, we get off the phone, you don't say I love you. It's, you always say like, talk to you later. Mm-hmm. But I never questioned my mother's love ever. Mm-hmm. But I had a conversation, and I came to find out that she didn't say it because my grandmother, her mother, didn't say it. And so it's just a behavior that is passed down. Mm-hmm. And once I had the conversation, now we do say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I was glad that I called it out, because she didn't have the tools. And sometimes we have to be the ones to kind of bring that to the forefront. But interestingly enough about my father, like, he didn't know who his dad was. And I think that what happened was the Black women that were around him and during his upbringing poured into him, and outwardly, like you said, a lot of the women, mm-hmm. in your family, they threw it around. And so I think that's just what he was surrounded by, and that's what he knew. And that's what I received from him. Mm-hmm. But present day, I don't have a ton of straight male friends that are close. Like, I know straight male friends, I can have conversations with them, but I don't have any that I can like really run to and say like, this is one of my straight male friends that I'm really like, mm-hmm. Judy's with, so to speak. But when I do engage with a straight man who is comfortable in his skin, who's comfortable in his sexuality, it's really quite refreshing. Like, I love to have a dialogue with a man who is a cis, you know, cis heterosexual man who is just 10 toes down on who they are and don't get uncomfortable, mm-hmm. to be surrounded in a gay environment or just by gay people or queer people. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, hopefully one day I get to have that experience. I would love to be able to call someone or a few people, you know, friends in that way that are straight, but I just don't have that yet. And I hope that we get to address that on the show, because it's one of the topics that I want to talk about, is like the relationship between gay Black men and straight Black men, because there's a conversation that needs to be had there.
Yeah.
Teron. So Teron, what's your take on that, on this question here?
This is really interesting listening to everyone talk, because I kind of have the same feeling where a lot of my relationships became more meaningful with straight men when I first of all accepted myself. A lot of times I was overcompensating, you know, I was so, as Jordan was saying, I was just like, you know, I had heard stories, I'd seen situations where people were, you know, cool with someone straight, and then maybe as their sexuality developed, then that person kind of said that someone said something, or people around them made a big deal of it, and that person moved away. And that was like a cautionary tale for me. So I would always overcompensate. I would always try to go extra hard to act like I didn't care, which sometimes meant that what's the word I'm looking for? Like, say like I was working out in the gym with a friend of mine that was straight or something, I would go extra hard to not spot them or to act like I didn't notice anything. And when I started getting to the point where I started being able to be comfortable with myself and comfortable with my own sexuality and comfortable with who I am and what I'm bringing and a sense of worthiness, like, I'm an asset to anyone who I'm in their life. Like you, if you have me as a friend, when I walk in the door, help comes through the door. So when I started owning that, I admit that my relationships with straight men became more robust because of the fact that we were able to get past, you know, any preconceived notions about what sexuality or gender or any of that kind of stuff would or would play into the way we treat each other. And we would just start to be like, actually, I fuck with you because this is how you are and this is who you've been and this is what we have in common and this is what our common goals are and our common denominators. And it just seemed like my relationships got better once I started, when I stopped overcompensating.
Yeah, I mean, the overcompensation moment, I think that is something that we can all relate to. Because we've all done it at some point or another, and it comes back time and time again until you finally get comfortable with who you are and living in your truth. So Ron, we're here to talk about non-sexual intimacy today, but we also want to flip that on its head and poke a couple holes in that idea. And so the queer community is often stereotyped as hypersexual, and as a result, some members of the community aspire to that non-sexual lifestyle just to be able to prove people wrong that they can do it. And so the question becomes, do you think that intimacy and sex can healthily exist with people who are not our partners?
So we're having sex with people that are not our partners and still can intimacy exist within that? And by so partner, like, you mean like, not? It's more casual. It's not my boyfriend. It's not
exactly. So it's not someone that is necessarily...
We're not even a potential boyfriend. Just right. We're just someone who you're just kind of kicking it with and spending time and then spending more time with.
See, that's the deal. Just at this point in my life, I don't know. I know it's possible. But for me, I don't really feel like sex is good unless there is some type of intimacy. Like, I can't really get into it and give you all my if we don't share something more than that. Now, there was a back in the day thing where you get on an app. I'm not shaming nobody, like, do it, it's hot. But there's a thing where you get on the app and you're kind of halfway representing yourself and they're halfway representing themselves, and you met off two pictures of torsos without heads and you're kind of trying to be that thing. And I can see where that's cool, but usually right after it's over, there's like all that shame and all that foolishness comes in and I'm not really there no more. So in order for sex to be good, I need to know something about you, and I need to know that you fuck with what you know about me, and then it can be hot.
But Taran, but that's the thing, like, you so I guess you agree with the concept that is like, you can have intimacy with someone that isn't necessarily your partner. Like, you can do that with someone that you're not in a relationship. We'll put that title on it. You're able to be intimate with anyone. Like, it can be the bro that you were kicking it with. Y'all having a good time. Y'all getting to know each other. That's intimacy. That's intimacy. Spending time together, asking each other about each other's lives, really going there and getting to know one another. But then you also happen to be sexually attractive, and you may do sexual things, but that, I think that that's able to exist.
I think it can absolutely, like, two things can be true at the same time. I say that a lot. And I think sometimes, and I've said this on the show before, one of the things that I've always liked about our community is that there is an experience with sexuality that is not heteronormative. It is not traditional. And I think that sometimes there's this desire to get towards heteronormative spaces within our community. And I think that that's the part where any version of this feels a little icky for me sometimes. When you get to the space where it's just like, I'm trying to prove the fact that I can be friends with somebody and not fuck him. Or, like, what if y'all are great friends and you do? Who cares? And, like, that's the thing that...
That's a good question.
...with, like, queer people that, like, in my journey at least, where I've been like, oh, that's fucking cool. Where, like, we can have a moment that's, like, maybe just fun, and it's about exploring our bodies and so on and so forth, that also can wrap and love on each other in a way that is intimate and it's just friendly as well. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean when I say like two things can happen at the same time. Like, I have tons of friends that like we've had some type of experience that was physical, but like I can also pour. I'm not gonna say pour. That. I can also have an exchange with them that is not about that. And I'm not having that exchange because I'm trying to prove that like now we have some deep connection. That's not about sex. I'm just having the connection with you because I enjoy you as a human.
Well, can the same be said for the opposite? Like you're trying to prove that you can have these connections and be sexual with someone and exist, you know,
I think so.
That's your life's work.
It is what I live to prove, that you can fuck these niggas and be fine.
I'm here for it.
That's my whole thing, and yeah.
But yeah, okay. I wanted to chime in on that word prove. Virtue signal to, you know, you do something to try to prove something. You do something because you want to prove this. I found in my life, anytime I'm trying to prove something, that's usually not my greatest good. I talked earlier about being curious about authenticity. My authenticity has nothing about proving shit. My authenticity is how I feel. So if anytime you approach anything, sexual, non-sexual, whatever, if you're approaching something from the idea of proving something to anybody but yourself, already there's a fallacy. So nah, I don't virtue signal. We talked about this a little bit. My father, I'm from the church. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of over the whole idea of virtue. It's like, no, who are you right now? Who are you really? Oh. And if you're signaling something or if you're proving something, chances are you're not being authentic. And that's not your greatness. Nothing really good will come out of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Like if you, like the when you start to have to prove that moment, it's kind of like you already lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think for
and
like
even when y'all were talking about that heteronormative thing, like even that's a real thing because so much of this shit comes from us approaching ourselves, our lives, our relationships, who we're attracted to. We approach so much of it with a sense of being unworthy, being less than, and it permeates so many of our decisions. And it's like trying to explain water to a fish. You can't even tell because you've all these images and all your society and every song and every movie and every TV show constantly regurgitates that what you are ain't right. So you naturally go and look. That's why I said earlier when you were like, the question was, if someone's a 10 and they take 12 hours to call you, are they still 10? Well, that's a worthiness issue because I'm kind of like, well, yeah, I don't want you to be too into it. I want you to be busy. There's some part of that still kind of says like, there should be things that are more important than me. So I'm just saying like, a lot of it has to do with the lack of worthiness. A lot of it has to do with these images that we've seen over and over again. And that permeates who we're attracted to. And that permeates the idea of virtue signal. You know, I'm queer, but they think we're hypersexual. So I'm gonna act like, you know, oh yeah, we're cool and we're friends and we don't do nothing because I'm trying to show something, because still there's some part of me that thinks that it's dirty or wrong.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think that this is something that I've struggled with a lot. I feel like, Damon, we talked about it a lot too, where I've been very church and state with like, friendships and my more intimate endeavors. I find that I used to have a hard time letting those things intersect and merge. And it's because I feel like sometimes I feel like when you mix the two, there's a higher possibility that there will be a negative outcome. And whether or not that's true for everyone, it's stuff that I experienced. And so for me, I felt like that's been like a struggle. But I can say present day that I am becoming a lot more comfortable with the idea of sort of just like a sexually intimate friend. That, you know, I'm not expecting anything from them. They're not expecting anything from me. I still think that they're a dope person. They can still come around and kick it. And I might even tell them about somebody who I'm dating, who I'm really interested in a long-term sense. And that's very new for me. That's probably something that's happened like since the pandemic, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like I think that before I just thought that they needed to be separate. And I think that this community is unique because the friendship pool is the same pool as your dating pool, mm-hmm. right? Everybody's mixed all up in there together. It's like, wow. it's friend one day, like beau the next day. And yeah, for me, it's just like, how do you manage that? And I guess the answer is don't.
Yeah, you can't right. manage
it. And just manage yourself and being a good person. And
yeah, that's it.
But that took a while to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, listen.
It was the same thing with me with the pandemic. Like, that's where the normalized non-sexual male intimacy, that's where it started for me, where I was in a relationship, the relationship ended, we were in a pandemic, and socially we were all truncated. And I was reaching out to people. I had social media, I was posting pictures, I was doing things, I was going to marches, and I was reaching out to people. And it was, like I said, part of it might've been my issue, but certainly I found that with other queer men, it was very difficult to approach even getting to know someone or reaching out to someone or saying, let's meet up, without either them misinterpreting it or me, you know, thinking that something might be some ulterior motives. And that's the reason why I was like, oh no, this is a real thing, because I'm at a point now where I need community. I need perspective. I need for there to be someone that kind of looks like me and kind of has similar perspectives and experiences like me to tell me what they think, without us feeling like, oh, so is this where it pops off? Or, oh, well, actually, I wanted to meet up with you, but I want to let you know I'm in a relationship. And it's like, oh, my bad. I wasn't trying to get at you. I really just wanted to meet up. We're in a pandemic. Let's talk. So that's kind of where I started being like, let me start showing up differently, because I knew that what I see in the world is probably an indicative of like what I'm putting out. So I knew that it was hard for me to establish like non-sexual intimacy. And the word intimacy to me just means like what Tony was saying earlier, to ask real questions and wait for the answer. And remember what they said the next time you talk to them. Compliment someone. Let them know what you're going through. You know, let them know what's really happening. Get off the phone with your mother and have a difficult conversation about family and reach out to that person and be like, this is where I'm at. How are you with your family? That's intimacy. Intimacy is not this whole thing of like, how am I around someone and try to figure out how to navigate through the whole sexual thing. Intimacy means like, can we have intimate conversation? Can we have intimate connection? And it may lead to sex, hopefully better sex. And if not, we understand who each other is and who we can be friends, or we can start a business, or we can never talk to each other again. But we were able to connect on some real shit.
Right. Now, previously on this topic, my thoughts would have been completely different, because I had always reduced being intimate as something that you only do with a partner. Mm-hmm. And sex is something that only happens with a partner or a fuck buddy. And what I realize now is that there are levels to intimacy and sex. And I'm, for one, I'm intimate with my friends all the time. And that was something that I used to think was weird. I used to be like, me and my friends don't touch each other like that. What is going on here? Like, I don't understand the caressing moment that's happening. And nowadays I'm slapping girls' butts. I'm cuddling with my friends. Like, I'm doing all the things that are intimate, but as friends, it's not really sexual amongst us because we have that relationship, but it took me a while to get there. But when it comes to sex, I can confirm that you can healthily have sex with someone that is not a partner, mm-hmm. because I've tested the theory personally, and I've succeeded. There's a case that has been made for that being able to be a thing that happens. And I'm like, okay, now at this point, I can say we're all adults. And so I do think that you have to get there, because a certain level of maturity is required, but it's possible.
Yeah.
Most of the sex I've had has not been with partners. Okay. Most of the sex I've had, you know, a lot, I mean, I'm trying to approach it differently with the whole normalized non-sexual male intimacy, but You know, a lot of times it's like you're doing the fuck buddy thing, and if it works out and you have a couple things in common, then you kind of be like, oh, maybe we actually could do something. And I used to always approach it the opposite way, like fuck. Oh, hey, you, let's spend a couple months together. Fuck. And now I'm starting to approach it like, yeah, now I'm starting to.
Wait. How'd that go again? Hold on, no. Wait. I have to digest that. Fuck. Hey, how you doing? What's going on? Oh, we got something in common.
That's what it seemed like. That's what it seemed like. Like, I'm of a certain age and I've been through it. I've done it. And it's just like, nah, there's so much of, you know, this whole DL lifestyle that I used to be in. But there was a whole thing that seemed interesting about acting like you were only available for sex. There was this thing that seemed hot about seeming like you were emotionally unavailable, emotionally truncated. That seemed hot, like, you know. So it was always fuck. And then, oh, here I go again. I'm saying it again. Yeah, but it was always fuck. And then, like, oh, actually, this is working out. Let's see how we can make it work. But again, sometimes it was like I didn't establish enough non-sexual intimacy at the beginning to where when the fuck would subside, it'd be like, who are you really? What do we really have in common? And we didn't have a real strong foundation to stand on. But nah, I think you do more sex with non-partners than you do with partners. That ratio is very different for me. It's like way more non-partner sex than partner sex.
Interesting.
Pray for me. Y'all pray for me.
Pray for us. All of us. All four of us.
No, I think... just thinking strategically with maybe Jordan's prayer, so we can start with you. Oh. How do you handle maybe if a platonic friend introduces sexuality into a relationship? Are there boundaries you've set up for yourself to make this work a bit easier for you, or a bit maybe less messy? Because it seemed before you were concerned about it getting too messy. But like, how do you handle these instances or exceptions? Or
I mean, I think in the past, I found that like I would build a intimate non-sexual relationship with someone. I would be like, oh, this is great. Like we're building a friendship. And then I would feel like certain sexual energy from that person. And I would tell them I'm not into that. And then they would disappear. And so I think that over time I've built like this negative sort of reaction to speaking up for myself because I felt like, and I really hope this doesn't come across the wrong way, but I think that a lot of times when I meet gay guys, I feel like there is an attraction first. And so it's very hard for me to decipher if somebody wants to be my friend or if somebody's trying to get into a romantic situation with me. And I feel like oftentimes it ends up being romantic when I just really want friends. And so what I found is that when I speak up for myself, these people disappear and then I don't have the opportunity to make friends. And so for a while, I felt like I would silence myself and try to prolong that uncomfortable conversation because I'm like, maybe they'll catch the clue. Maybe they'll like catch the unspoken clues and they'll just like know that this is the friend zone because I'm not reciprocating. But I think recently, I mean, I just have to be more...
10 toes down.
Yeah, it's got to be like, it's like... At this point, I really don't have the free time to continuously do ring around the rosy and beat around the bush with people. Child. And if I feel like someone is like flirting with me or trying to give me sexual energy when I'm trying to keep things platonic, I just let them know. And I think that I try to make those boundaries clear sooner so that we can get over it sooner, whether that means you vanish into thin air and I never see you again, unfortunately. R.I.P. to all the friends who I didn't want to date, but like
they were never friends.
They were never friends.
I know, that's the sad part, because I thought that we were actually becoming friends.
It's not sad. You don't want that in your life.
It's not, because it's actually you cannot possibly be sad about
when
that
people show when, you who they are
when that's not something you even want. You often know, talk about having no time to spend with people, spending major time with minor people, and I think that that's not something that
I know, I mean it's a gift.
It's a gift. I get it. It's half glass like full, half.
No, that glass is running over.
Yes,
I think. No, seriously, when people opt out of your life, they weren't, they didn't need to be in the first place. Yeah. Like, that's something that I think maybe, like, is not even worth looking at as, like, a missed opportunity. It's something worth looking at as, wow, I dodged that bullet.
Yeah.
Wow, let me actually, whatever time that, whatever time that I was going to invest in that, let me invest it in the people in my life that are pouring into me.
Yeah.
And I think that's more of, like, how, at least I would look at it, and I hope that, like, you can get to the space where, like, you don't feel like, oh, I've missed out on a thing. You miss out on shit, y'all. Fuck them.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is all a superpower. It's all a superpower. That's what I'm saying. Like, ultimately, this reveals the truth. There's never a problem with seeing the truth. You know, sometimes we have expectations, or, you know, especially now with social media, and we're all entrepreneurs through our creativity. We want people to like us because it's part of our brand. It's part of our fan base. It's part of the people, our foot soldiers that help us to get the message out there. So a lot of times I engage people specifically, like on social media, I engage people and I'll go back and forth, and then they'll start saying things. And I'm like, okay, cool. My thing is, my whole fucking platform is non-sexual male intimacy. So I have no problem at all telling a person, like, this is where it is. This is what I'm doing. This is where I'm at. To be honest with you, there was a time where when I first started the platform and really started, you know, presenting myself this way, I was celibate because I really was like, let me just take that shit off the table. And I agree with you that some part of it became like virtue signaling, because that would be a thing when I would do a talk. I'd be like, as a matter of fact, right now, I'm celibate. And my thing is like, well, yeah, because it's like,
sounds like one of my friends.
I live this. I believe this
on this podcast.
And it's like, no, it ain't me. Oh, wow. So there's a part of me now that's like, now you just tell people what it is. And again, as you're all saying, like, you reveal your truth and they show you who they really are. There are 9 billion people on the planet. If someone can't deal with the meal that you put on the table, then we have lovely gift bags at the door on your way out.
Hello. God. Put the plate on the table.
God.
But,
you know what?
They still talking about you, Tony.
Listen,
put the plate on the to-go plate.
I was a step ahead. No, but
I like it.
As it relates to this topic, though, I think that when you have a platonic friend, that things become a little bit more like, what are we? I think it's case by case. Like, generally, I don't engage in sexual activity with a platonic friend. And I've only really had one instance where that I can recall, at least, that I had a friend that was platonic and that we were non-sexually intimate, and that led me to be like, hold on now, I like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When we cuddle, it's nice.
Yeah. Looking nice.
You know, I enjoyed that, and I was like, well,
he touched me there.
And I was like, we actually had a conversation about it, like, should we? And I think that it would happen is what's supposed to happen, because I do think, you know, I would like to keep that person as a lifelong friend, and I don't know if a relationship would have actually worked out. But sexual things, I was like, I could be into that with you, and like, it wouldn't be a thing. I would actually be okay with it. So I think that I'd like to make exceptions when the feelings are mutual. But if they're not, I don't want to play those games.
But I think there's also value in having direct and clear conversations.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that like doesn't happen sometimes. People just like go with the flow. Things devolve into shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like we had discussed, like, oh, is this what you want or is this what I want? Do those things align? Do they not?
Yeah.
Like, where are we with them? And I think that's the value in the scenario you just explained that makes it different from what happens in a lot of these scenarios where people just like go with the flow until now we're over the waterfall.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not even the flow. Sometimes people are just going with what they've already seen. So, you know, this is the deal. There was a way, talking about that whole heteronormative, like, homophobic, white supremacist way I was thinking before. Like, there was a way where I didn't know how to approach people unless I was trying to act like, how you doing? I didn't even know how to I didn't even know how to present my artistry. I didn't even know how to present my point of view without there being some kind of like, yo, so what you doing after the meeting? It wasn't good. So sometimes it's not even about like, you know, people going in a direction like it's a natural progression. Sometimes people are like, wait, this feels good. We're cool. We get along. We live in close proximity. Should we have sex? Should we be in a relationship? I like the fact that you actually, Tony, that y'all communicated and talked about it, because sometimes sex can fuck shit up.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes you can be in a relationship, a friendship with someone that you like, I want to be friends with this person forever, and you have too much to drink and some shit go down and it changes the dynamics. 100%. Not always, but
not always.
It's great to have the communication to make sure that won't happen.
Yeah, no, we definitely talked about it, and it was nice because we had the conversation. And we both realized that this is not happening. That. Everyone around us saw it happening, but it was nice to like have the dialogue and just be like, you know what? Let's keep it.
I know exactly what you're talking about right now.
I wish I was there. I want to know. Okay.
I'm in New York. You'll see it.
We'll talk about it. Maybe. After dark.
I'm coming.
Let's kind of wrap up here. So, present day, as we talk about demonstrating non-sexual intimacy in our relationships with both straight and queer men, how are you doing that? How are you finding ways to share yourself, Jordan?
I think that with queer men, like, I'm pretty mature in my ability to express non-sexual intimacy. Like, we hug, we give a kiss on the cheek when we like greet each other. Like, we ask each other how each other's days are going. We talk about each other's lives and what you're working through. So I don't think that I have any deficiency when it comes to establishing intimate relationships in platonic environments with gay men or queer men. With straight men, though, that's a learning process. Mm-hmm. But it is getting better. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think it's important to not feel like I need to take the onus on that. I think it's the straight people's responsibility to step the fuck up. Because I asked my straight cousins how their relationships are going and try to get into a deeper like understanding of what's going on in their lives. And I feel like they're getting there with me too. Mm-hmm. Like, my cousin just came up for him and his girlfriend had an anniversary. They came up to Harlem. I went out to lunch with them and he was asking me who I was dating. Mm-hmm. And he followed up with those questions. And he, like, this is new for us. Like, this is somebody who I grew up with, like, since I was born, basically. Mm-hmm. And to see his growth and his comfort level and just like his level of respect for just me as a human being has evolved so much. I've also established some really strong relationships with just straight people who make space for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like a lot of times when I'm interacting with straight men, they'll avoid conversations that lean into my sexuality. Mm-hmm. When it's just like, you're not gay because you're asking me how my dating life is going.
Right.
You can actually just be interested in how my love life is evolving.
Because you care about me as a person.
Right. Because you care about me as a person. And that's what we're talking about in our 30s. Mm-hmm. And so I have a couple of straight friends who do that, and we have very meaningful relationships. And like, I can talk to them about the girls they're dating. They can talk to me about the guys I'm dating, and it's not weird. And at no point, no matter how long the night goes or how many drinks we have, no one's worried about anybody crossing lines. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for me, I take the lead of the straight people who are around me. I'm not forcing myself on straight people. The straight people who want to be a part of my life and make space for me, I will make space for them. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the direction and the approach that I'm taking.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I need you to bear with me for a second because
you have a statistic.
A late card. Because no, I have a story. Yeah, this one came very late in the game, but it was here. I saved it for this moment. I came across an article, and bear with me.
Yes.
Came across an article on racebaiter.com that said, why Black people need to explore non-sexual intimacy. And it deals with this person's relationship with the idea of touch. And having lived through and witnessed physical, sexual, and emotional abuse and how that's conditioned them to be preoccupied with controlling their body at all times. So then they go on to say that they're actively involved with loving their friends. Their friends are their truest, deepest, longest standing loves. Our contact, presence, and connection with each other is incredibly intimate, and our touch is sacred, especially because it has been used as a weapon to fuel America's economy. And lastly, they went on to say that white supremacy and cis heteropatriarchy encourages us to have selective redistributions of our intimacy, touch, and care that are reserved specifically for sexual partners and family members. And in order to thrive, these systems must invalidate intimacy and romance of other connections, especially those of single individuals. This, for me, said a lot.
Oh my God, that's my next tattoo. That's my next
this
tattoo.
This, for me,
the whole thing.
This, for
that.
Me,
yeah, said that's my next tattoo right here.
No, that for me, that for me said a lot, because it's so many constructs that are around why people feel the way they feel about intimacy.
Mm. Yeah.
And you don't even realize how it's working on you. Mm-hmm. And right. A lot of us don't. And so for me, my love language is quality time spent. And so that shows up when we talk about the ways in which I'm demonstrating non-sexual intimacy. I'm showing that by simply reaching out to my friends, by simply holding you accountable to your goals, being a cheerleader for you, going out for drinks or dinner and really catching up. Or it also shows up with, you know, me being a better listener. And that, I think, is important, which is one of my goals for this year, is just trying to, like, be someone who can just be a listening ear for my friend, be there for a life-changing event, take care of a bill if you're going through something, or complimenting you on a job well done, or simply just saying, you look good today, bitch, like you slayed.
I got a bill you can take care of.
I'm going today. You can take care of some bills.
We both last door to that. I was just like, oh, Tony paying bills.
Not that bill.
Okay, student loan forgiveness over here.
I want people to go, like, that article, and I had to read it all because it was important.
That's
and
wonderful.
I didn't think about this from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it drives home, like, kind of a lot of what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
I mean, it's exactly everything you're saying, and I love every example of, like, how you make people feel, this is what intimacy is. Make someone feel seen and make them feel heard. Let them know that they exist. So, like what you said, like you do compliments. You recognize where they are in their life. You share your own things. When we're talking about the idea of, like, straight people, us knowing everything about their relationship and they're not knowing nothing about our relationship, it's like we have to be accountable for that shit. You know, you teach people how to treat you. So if you're in these friendships or you're in these relationships and they seem one-sided, that's your fault.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think the thing that I thought about with this question was maybe a little more practical.
Mm-hmm.
Not more practical, but just very practical. I thought about the last couple of years and how I built relationships and deeper relationships. And I found that FaceTime was one of the most powerful things that I've discovered and explored in the last few years. It was the impetus for the deeper connection I have with my partner. I think talking to a lot of my friends, I think there's so much power in being able to look someone in the face and in the eye and ask how they're doing. Just because I think on the phone or via text message or, like, all the things that we curate for social media.
When you say FaceTime, are you talking about the
FaceTime?
Are you talking about FaceTime on the phone?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, got you. I didn't know if you meant, like, in person. Okay, go ahead.
Well, that too, but, like, during the pandemic.
Yeah, what I'm saying, because at this point in our lives, we have so many friends that aren't based in New York.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that there's value in being able to look at someone, even if digitally.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that we weren't doing before. If you FaceTimed me
not at all
on a random
Wednesday, I didn't use that at all.
I would think that you had hit a wrong button and something was happening.
Yeah.
Like you did today?
Yeah, like I did today. I FaceTimed y'all by mistake earlier. I was walking
what
into
the fuck? I didn't mean to do that.
Intrusive. Right. It's so intrusive.
Exactly.
It's so intrusive. It's like, it's in there. Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas now, even my straight friends, my queer friends, I'll just, like, pop up on them like, yo, what's really going on?
Yeah.
Because, like, when you text someone, they'll, like, they give you the shortest answer so we can not text all day.
Emojis.
When we're on social media, it's curating the best parts of our lives. So we're most happy now. But when you pop up on someone, and not even maybe just pop up, but just even if you're scheduling, and, like, especially, like a lot of the men in my lives, like, I do have actually a lot of straight friends from either college or just in my life generally. And being able to just, like, look someone square in their face, like, you can't lie then. And I don't mean lie because people want to deceive, but people don't want to share. And I've found that that tool and being able to use it throughout the pandemic and now has been something that has been very valuable because it removes the physical piece of it for the queer people in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I can't fuck you on FaceTime, kind of. But
there's options.
There are options.
There's those little.
But generally, there's less of an option. That's what I would say. y'all are disgusting. But my point more being, I think that it's meant a lot for the relationships in my life to be able to look people in the face, no matter where they are in the world, no matter where we're locked away or not, to just be able to have some level of value and intimacy and really. To what Taran was saying, making people feel seen. That's what this whole fucking show is about.
You need to cut someone a check because you got engaged based off of a nasty evil FaceTime.
sickening FaceTime. Over and over again.
For hours and hours.
Are now going. To thank our fantastic guests for coming along today. Taran, for the people that want to learn more about you or find out more about your art and your work, how can they find you? What do you have coming up next? Anything you want to share?
Oh, I'm working on a book. Oh, wow. I'm so excited about it because it's going to be pictures and the lyrics of my songs because I wrote so many songs when I wasn't out. And so I would write these songs about my love for Black men and I would hand it to some strong woman like Maya or Jennifer Lopez or someone to sing it because I felt like the world wasn't ready for it. And now I'm going back and owning it. There's something amazing about photography and social media. Like I found my tribe. And so now I get to go back and reparent that Taran that didn't feel like he was worthy to show like where the inspiration for his art was coming from. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm really excited about it. That's why conversations like this are so important because I'm like, yo, y'all feel the same way I feel? That's how culture changes when you can look at someone else and go, oh, you too? Really? I thought I was the only one. So this is, I'm moving through the planet and finding like my tribe. I'm excited about it. So taranbeal.com and I love Instagram, maybe too much. My Instagram is at Taran Beal. Maybe too much.
Thank you. And that is all the time that we have this week. This season, we're raising money for the Ollie Forney Center, an organization committed to protecting LGBTQIA+ youth from homelessness and empowering them to live independently. One of the ways that you can help is by joining our Surface Level Small Talk conversation on Tuesday, August 23rd. Small Talk is a live audio platform where you can join intimate conversations with us. 100% of the tips that we receive will go directly to the Ollie Forney Center. For details on how to RSVP for the Small Talk discussion, visit surfacelevelpodcast.com. And remember, stay curious.